What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action? Starting a bike advocacy group. No matter how bike-friendly your city is, as you're riding through the neighborhoods on your way to work or the grocery store, you've likely noticed the moments of inequity for cyclists. Maybe it was the lack of bike parking at your destination. Maybe it was a delivery truck in the bike lane, like the images that fill every urban cyclist Twitter feed. Or as my guest describes it, maybe you've noticed barriers for women and minorities to get into cycling. When tackled solo, these issues are daunting. However, when approached as a group, that collective voice has the power to bridge gaps and make cycling a more accessible, equitable, and enjoyable mode of transit. Enter Aubrey Byron, one of my colleagues at Strongtowns and president at the Monthly Cycle, a St. Louis-based bike advocacy group whose mission is to foster an inclusive and more accessible bicycling community for women and non-binary St. Louisans. In this episode, you're going to learn everything you need to know to start a bike advocacy group in your town, including how to act on the idea, spread your message, and make an impact on local cycling policies. Plus, you'll learn the value of making cycling more accessible for everyone, a much-needed reminder for anyone who understands the power cycling has on our communities. Enjoy. Hey there, Aubrey. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
Doing good. Doing good. How's life in St. Louis?
It's great. It's starting to get chilly, which I enjoy on my bike, actually.
Yeah, it's good to layer up a little bit. Makes it extra fun.
Yeah.
Well, Aubrey, I'm just overjoyed to be chatting with you today. And listeners, if you're asking yourself, is this the same Aubrey who writes all those banging articles for Strongtowns? The answer is yes. And today she's going to tell us about why bike advocacy groups are so important for cities and towns and how you can make it happen. It's going to be a fun talk. I'd love to start off by talking about the motive behind the Monthly Cycle. What was the mobility landscape in St. Louis and the overall conversation around cycling that motivated you and your fellow cyclists to start the Monthly Cycle?
The organization was started by my friend Courtney Cushard, and it was really just born of this experience of continually going to group rides and being the only woman, or maybe one, or maybe two women. And usually she was finding that, you know, the other people showing up would come once and never come back. And so she was just like, how can I get more women on bikes to ride with? Like, I know they're out there, but where are they? So she decided to make a women's only group ride, meets once a month, and just put it out on Facebook. And immediately, you know, there was a response to it. There was really nothing like that in the community, maybe something like further out in the county, but not in the city. I was immediately drawn to it. I was working in a bike shop at the time and was pretty immersed in the experience of cycling as a male-dominated space. So I right away was hooked and started volunteering and eventually got involved with the leadership. And that's kind of when we decided to push it into more than just a ride and started doing workshops and fundraisers and advocacy efforts.
That's awesome, Aubrey. And I appreciate you talking about the history of the Monthly Cycle, because it totally rings true. Most of these ideas are generated from like a lived experience. So we're cycling because we love it, but we notice that the bike lane randomly stops as we get to the main corridor, or we're going through the sharrows on our low stress streets and there's massive potholes and cars honking at us despite us going the same speed. Once you have this idea, like Courtney did, how do you spread that idea and get people to buy into it and eventually join the group?
We just used Facebook. She made a group and started posting about rides there. And it was really a word of mouth, invite your friends, anybody's welcome kind of thing. As we became a nonprofit, we made an official page instead of just a group. And so supporters and allies could kind of find us and see what we were up to. So we've been operating completely off of Facebook up until now. Now we're actually getting a website and, you know, some more official things. But the group still exists and is only open to women and non-binary folks, so they can sort of have a space to ask questions and plan their own rides and, you know, have this sort of like intimidation-free community.
So if someone has the idea to start a bike advocacy group, Aubrey, are there existing groups that are good to ally with early on? Is it important to reach out to a local bike shop or to reach out to your bike pedestrian coordinator? Thinking back on the history of the monthly cycle, were there any groups that really helped elevate y'all's impact on cycling?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have been really lucky to have the support of a lot of local bike shops. And bike shops are aware of the disparity in cycling. They know it's a problem and it's something that they're trying to work and overcome too. So we found the reception to be really positive from bike shops, from other businesses in the community. And then we also have like other nonprofits or groups trying to do similar things. We partner with Black Girls Do Bike a lot, which is a national organization, but has a St. Louis chapter and try to do collaborative rides. And they're dealing with both the gender disparity and the racial disparity in cycling. Anytime you can like get out in the community and build more relationships with people, it's really helpful.
So Aubrey, we've started this idea of a bike advocacy group. We're starting to reach out to folk and connecting with some great like-minded people who have bought into the mission. How do you know what to advocate for? Like, is it more effective to advocate for cycling as a whole? Or in your opinion, is it more effective to advocate for a subgroup of cyclists, like what the monthly cycle has been doing with the disparity in cycling? What have you noticed to be more effective?
The thing about that is when you have gaps in infrastructure and hostile conditions, and you already have this disparity in cycling, those gaps are going to exaggerate that disparity. So the Netherlands is known for its bike friendliness and has a perfect 50-50 gender ratio of bikers. And in the U.S., it's 3-1. So in a survey of why women weren't riding more, the number one cited reason was concerns about safety. So anytime you're advocating for cycling generally, you're inadvertently advocating for women in cycling. So that's kind of important to keep in mind just with any talk about infrastructure or traffic calming or anything like that. But the monthly cycle is just a way to take a group of people we know anecdotally and statistically have been intimidated out of a culture and just do everything we can to strip away that intimidation. And whether that's like a space to ask questions or just getting more comfortable riding on the road because you're with a group, or, you know, just knowing where to ride, like what roads are the best. All of those factors can help make it just a little bit easier for someone to overcome those barriers and to it, the bike as a form of transportation.
Yeah. And you're totally right, Aubrey, in regard to the concern of safety, in regards to women's willingness to cycle. I don't recall the exact study, but I think Brent Tudarian on Twitter posted something about how once we have demarcated bike lanes with some kind of protected barrier, women's ridership goes up like 70%. And, you know, sometimes here in the States, we sadly don't get to live in Copenhagen or the Netherlands, we don't often really get that infrastructure, or it takes a long time to make it happen. But the great thing about the monthly cycle, there's another way that we can kind of foster the sense of safety, and that's riding in groups. Like if a young lady wants to start community by bicycle, but there's that barrier of poor infrastructure, two or three of you can join. And that's something that's really powerful about y'all's group. And I love how the possibility of riding as a team, as a group, can foster that sense of safety. That's huge.
Yeah, absolutely, it can.
So Aubrey, we have this like-minded group of folk. How official does the group have to be to make it effective? I think about here in Denton, we have a Tuesday night bike ride. There's about 200 folk that meet outside the University of North Texas and go on a 5-mile trip. They're not a 501c3 or anything, but it's a cool opportunity to meet some fellow cyclists and ride as a team throughout the city. Have you seen benefits from the monthly cycle as being like an official registered 501c3 as opposed to just a group that gets together now and then and rides?
Yeah, and that's a really good question, because I think that that idea can sound intimidating if you're just like a group of people getting together and organizing through Facebook. We're not exactly experts on tax law or anything like that. So it's definitely something. The reason we decided to file personally is because we have this big event called the Diva Cup that we're putting on. And the first couple iterations of it, we were paying out of pocket ourselves to fund this event, just the people who were involved. And we realized that we wanted to do more advocacy, and there were things that we wanted to do that were going to cost money. And we really should flip that event into becoming a fundraiser for ourselves. And that's what it's been for the last 3 years. And we actually just had it last week. So the reason to become a 501c3 for us, a lot of it was just because that's what you need to start a bank account in a business. That was the biggest reason. You can also file as like a 501c7 is a group, but then member dues, I believe, aren't taxed, but any other contributions would be. But we knew we wanted to do more, so that's kind of what led us to file. But you could just get together and not have to worry about any of that. And if you're not really trying to like raise or spend money, then, you know, you don't have to deal with the hassle. But it is a little bit easier than I think most people assume.
Cool. That's great to know. Have you noticed that filing officially has helped your credibility as a group, like given power behind the collective voice as you combat any kind of suckling issues happening locally?
Yeah, absolutely. Both giving us credibility for, you know, our letter to the city when we wrote one about our MT bike pedestrian coordinator position, but then also on the side of like when we are soliciting donations and things like that, we get a lot more national support now because we're able to give a tax deductible letter and, you know, they can kind of see what it is that we're about a little more clearly because we have a statement.
And now Chrome's hooking it up with backpacks and stuff. Is that right?
That is one of our latest supporters that we're really excited about. And they, once again, like these companies know that there's a problem in the disparity in gender and cycling. So they're usually really excited when they find something like this that they can get involved with.
Yeah, that's awesome, Aubrey. So we talked a little earlier about social media, how Courtney had this idea and started using Facebook. Once we've engaged this group of folk and we have this good membership that's bought into the mission, how can we use social media to continue to foster this group? And it was awesome to sit down with you at the North Texas Gathering a couple of weeks ago for Strong Towns. And you had this great presentation and you got to talk about how you use social media as this private forum for women who had private questions about cycling. So how have y'all used social media to engage the people who are part of your group?
Yeah, so that's a really cool thing for us. And probably one of my favorite things about the group in general is I think there can be so many things that are intimidating, especially to admit, say, in a bike shop or to somebody, your friend that's really knowledgeable. And you know, no one likes that feeling of not knowing what they're talking about or not knowing, like, you know, it's the feeling I think I get when I walk into like an automotive store. It's just primal fear from the unknown. So the idea of the space is just to be able to say, you know, especially sensitive questions like, what do you do about saddle sores? What can be of something that will make this bike fit me better? Does anybody want to go on a ride this Saturday? All of those sorts of things are something you can reach through that space. And it is only open to women and non-binary folks. So that does strip a little bit of the intimidation out. But there are plenty of, you know, other forums. Like there's groups that get together through Reddit that use Meetup. And I think at a certain point, Meetup will like charge, and accessibility is a big issue for us. So we don't want to collect dues. You know, wherever you're already getting together with people and communicating with people, any of those platforms are a great way to reach.
That's awesome. And it makes the mission so much stronger too. Like it's beyond bike lanes at this point. I mean, it's empowering women to cycle and making it more accessible for all genders. That's remarkable, Aubrey. I appreciate you sharing that. So I love to talk about the group's impact on local government. Has the monthly cycle taken any initiatives to add its voice to the current bike walk infrastructure of St. Louis? I know you mentioned writing a letter regarding the vacant bike pedestrian coordinator position. What has that relationship been like with local government?
Yeah, that's been our kind of one big advocacy project that we took on this year was just, and this really was just from noticing, and actually Kia had to do with that, our fellow coworker who I know through the monthly cycle, realizing that this bike coordinator position, bike and pedestrian coordinator position had been vacant for several months, almost a full year. And there was a pretty steep qualification list, including being a registered engineer. And so we did a little bit of research, a small coalition and us, and found that no other of the like more than 27 cities that have this position, none of them required it to be held by an engineer. A couple of them were. Yeah. But, urban planning backgrounds and people with masters in public health would be more than qualified to hold this position. And so part of the reason it was vacant is they weren't finding qualified applicants. You know, I work in communications and decided let's write a letter to the city and ask them to change this. And so we communicated with some bike shops, with some alder persons, and eventually got them to sign on. And that position has actually recently since been filled.
Since they hired the bike pedestrian coordinator, has he or she reached out to the monthly cycle and trying to tap into the local advocacy groups?
No, but I hope that that is something that happens, and we're hoping to reach out as well. And then something else on the advocacy side for 2019, we're hoping to take on is more tactical urbanism projects, because we do have a pretty harsh landscape for cycling and for pedestrians in St. Louis.
And I totally hope the bike pedestrian coordinator reaches out as well. The city of Denton also had a vacant position for it for I think 8 months. It was a while because we brought in a new city manager, and for some reason he didn't really see that the position was viable. But then they're like, oh, you have to have one in the city of Denton. So thankfully they brought it back. And we hired a gentleman from Washington, D.C., former urban planner, and he's just been doing a wonderful job. And the first week he was hired, he came and spoke at the Bearded Monk. It's our local pub. And his big message was, hey, like, if you're doing bike advocacy, like, come talk to me. Like, we have to start these partnerships early on. So I hope the same happens in St. Louis, because it's been really great ally for us.
Yeah. And St. Louis is a city where it's also really necessary, because we consistently have some of the highest level of pedestrian deaths in the country. And a lot of those are and really inequitable in where they happen and who they happen to. So yeah, I hope to see some progress since that has been filmed.
Yeah. It's a great start, because I think it's so important just to have a champion in local governments for the pedestrian and cyclists. So even if it's a slow start, at least someone's like showing up to those council meetings and like tapping on the engineer's shoulder whenever there's like a resurfacing planned. Well, Aubrey, for someone who's listening to this podcast and they're inspired to start their own bike advocacy group, and I'm actually going to split this up into two parts. The first part, what can someone who wants to start their own group do tomorrow to help make it happen? And then second, for someone who's listening and a couple familiar existing groups are coming to their mind, why is it so important for them just to simply join, just to simply show up?
For the first one, you know, just do it. Just make a post. Just ask a couple friends to join you. The other thing you'll find is that when you get a group of people together on bikes, people take interest and they notice you. Cars notice you, people walking by do, and they might start to ask you about it. So that kind of visibility is a big part of it too, beyond just empowering the people who are on bikes with you, but also, you know, being noticed and seen by the community at large. As far as why to show up, I think you'd be surprised, like, the kind of people you'll find when you put yourself out there. I've made so many incredible friends from all like different areas of the city, from different walks of life, just through this group. And it's become like a really great place for just networking and community and people I wouldn't have had the pleasure, including Kia, of knowing otherwise, I don't think, that you get to cross paths with. And I think anytime you can be involved in something like that to make your own personal community bigger, it's a really great way to connect with your city.
Beautiful. Aubrey, to wrap up, and this is the question we end every podcast with, how does starting a bike advocacy group make our town stronger?
I think strong towns need to be accessible on a human scale, and that many people want it to be that way. So I think it's really easy when our built environments are intimidating and our multimodal transport communities feel exclusive. It's really easy to just throw up your hand and say, well, it'd be nice if we were like Portland, but until then, I'm going to have to drive. And I think that the slope from being a one-time biker to an advocate is a really slippery one, because you can immediately see the potential and a need for change. Mm-hmm. I think Chuck, in one of his articles, was actually the one who said that actually getting on a bike and experiencing his town that way really changed his views on urban cycling and cycling law. So I think that experience is really important just for perspective. But generally, more people on bikes are more people out of cars. It's less congestion. It's less spending on expensive auto infrastructure maintenance. And being with a group is a really great place to learn routes. You get to like experience your city through this whole new way. I know every time I'm on a bike, this really... It really happens. You just go, you turn your head and you're like, what's that business? I've never seen that before. Because you, when you're flying by things at 30 miles per hour, you're not going to notice, you know, the places in your community that you could be supporting.
It's chickens in the front yard that I notice on my way to the grocery. It was an unusual route. The main corridor happened to be closed. So I said, okay, I'll take Boulevard. And then there were like a dozen chickens in this person's front yard. Wouldn't have noticed that if I wasn't on the bicycle.
I can't tell you so many things. And like historical architecture, that's something like a nerdy thing that I like to look at while I'm biking that you definitely don't notice in your car. There's so many cool, you know, characteristics of your city that you get to experience a lot more fully.
Yeah. And you can make some good friends in the meantime.
Absolutely.
Love it. Well, Aubrey, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. It's been an absolute joy. If anyone listening wants to connect with you, learn more about the work you're doing with the Monthly Cycle and or Strong Towns, where can people find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is aubrey.com. You can email my Strong Towns email, which is aubrey@strongtowns.org, and find the Monthly Cycle on Facebook.
Beautiful. Well, Aubrey, thank you so much for chatting, and we'll talk very soon.
All right. Thanks so much for having me, Jacob.
Bye, Aubrey.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes, and we will chat next week. See ya.